up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Pacifica Radio.
Una sot Radio Pacifica al KPFT 90.1 FM for Houston.
Una sikiza tisini nukta moja FM KPFT Houston.
Yawad hai Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
Oh hai Pacifica Toy kissing scene.
Chaliye, aaj hum sab mil karke is dharti pe shanti ke liye.
Chúng tôi muốn nói lên sự thật cho giới lãnh đạo được biết. Chúng tôi là Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
一同向和平進發，我哋係侯斯頓嘅 Pacifica KPFT 90.1 FM 90.1.
Mimi ni Pacifica, uhuru wa mazungumzo kwa watu walio huru.
Hum taqat ke samne bhi sachai se bolte hain. Hum hain Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
Let's all get together and pray for the peace on earth.
Min ghair al-adala مش ممكن نوجد السلام.
Hey, you are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. Well, you would be if our transmitter were working. So right now, if you're listening, the only way is over the internet, but good luck with that.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
And welcome to this false edition of Technology Bites here on what was 90.1 FM KPFT, but is now online radio streaming to the masses all over the world.
Yes, internet-only version of Technology Bites.
Elite version.
Right. Those of you who are not tuned in right now because you're listening to the radio.
Don't even know it.
All right, welcome to Technology Bites.
The poster with the...
I mean, the poster with the lizards doesn't count, or?
Doesn't count. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Heath.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Dwight is on vacation. Pete, you're breaking up a little bit. And that's not hard.
Really?
Yeah, this is a little bit. But I don't know. Maybe that's part of the whole broadcast problem that we're having. So we're not broadcasting on the air. We're not actually going out over the airwaves right now because there's something. Well, other people have diagnosed it as being a transmitter problem. However, Groovehouse has
a problem. Wait a minute. I concur, though.
Well, Groovehouse noticed that the output meters are not doing anything from the board, so it's almost as if nothing is coming from here to hit the transmitter. So we don't know. We assume that whoever's in charge of dealing with such problems is
fully aware,
dealing with it appropriately, but who knows?
Please stand by while we reboot the radio station.
Have you powered the radio station on and off again? So what exactly is the error message you're receiving when you're trying to broadcast? So, as a result, we can do the normal stuff. If you you can tune us in when the radio's working on 90.1 FM. You can visit us online on the internet, which is working. Unless
it's not,
you have the doomsday virus.
I think that's why Pete's cutting in and out, because if we're 100% internet right now, there's none left over for Pete.
Maybe.
The math works out.
I like your fuzzy math. So does the pedo bear. 713-526-5738 is the number to call a little bit later if you want to be on the air. You can visit us online at geekradio.com. We're hanging out in IRC, the show within a show. That's like even the smaller broadcast, although the IRC group might be our only audience.
That's true. That's very true.
So you can hang out on IRC, irc.cuckoo.com in the channel Tech Bytes, or you can use the web interface to join up on the IRC.
Which is an unfortunate time for this to happen because, you know, I was gonna try to use radio mentions in order to get, like, you know,
Elite DEF CON invites?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Well, online would be the best place to get those, so.
So what IRC channel should we be hitting up?
You think, Kevin Mitnick?
Mitnick, hello, paging Kevin Mitnick. Are you hacking my computer right now? I know you can hear me.
I know you.
Shout out to WBAI, Emmanuel Goldstein.
So, yeah, we have complete control to do whatever. So the question is, do FCC rules apply to a radio station that's only broadcasting on the web due to technical difficulties?
Yes.
Really?
Really? How do you know this, Groovehouse?
I don't.
See, I don't think it applies to internet, but...
It doesn't apply to the internet.
So if you're not actually on the air, then I'm really not sure that they do apply. The station but may want them to apply.
We're still operating under
our FCC
KPFT's FCC license.
Can we move that license over?
Is that a
Could we, like, go under Jay's driver's license?
I'll stand up.
But are we really operating under it if we're not actually broadcasting it all?
These are the moral dilemmas.
If you say all those words when no one can hear them on a radio, then it still counts?
What if the license isn't plugged into the board?
Well, this one says that too many people have registered this license.
Oh, no.
Well, I think it's just good practice to not break FCC rules just so we don't get in the habit.
Oh, what the...
Wow.
They took away my sign, my reference, my cheat sheet of all the words we're not supposed to say. It's gone.
The cheat sheet that tells you the seven deadlies is gone.
Now it's lame stuff like saying don't use forklifts and be careful with money and something about a cell phone, smoking kills. Yeah, it's... Oh, well. All my F words are gone.
Fun. Frolic.
Fans.
Phonetics. All right, so we're going to try to do the show as best we can, but we're going to stretch it out with as much inane banter because we're not expecting a lot of calls since we're not broadcasting. But we're going to go ahead and do the Technology Bites Info Shot live from San Antonio with Peter Hughes.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
All right. Well, I apologize in advance. I have sort of the end of a summer cold, so I hope I won't cough. But at least it won't go out over the airwaves. It'll just be out of the wires. This one's an interesting one. You know, people know me on the show as sort of the one of the Apple guys and all of that, but I don't know what I think about this current story, even though it's obviously very good news for Apple. All sides of the smartphone wars agree that the 25 patents that Apple was granted yesterday have some powerful legal weapons. You know, so they've just gotten a bunch of patents related to kind of mobile smartphone stuff. One of the patents in particular, portable electronic devices, stands out. Yeah, basically it's the user interfaces that Apple designed for blogging, email, telephone, camera, video player, calendar, browser, widgets, search, notes, maps, and most importantly, a multi-touch interface. On some of these things, though, if you look at them, it's kind of like, you know, phone, the telephone interface, the you know, that's where the buttons are, you know, the interface for that. Is that really, you know, I don't know. It just seems like a lot of these patents, there seem to be a lot of patents that are problematic. And the biggest thing is when they reduce innovation instead of rewarding innovation, I must say I'm kind of, I'm on the fence with it. You know, I don't have big investments in Apple, so if they clean up for it, I don't gain. And if other companies can't compete with Apple and push them to do better, then I don't know that that's a reward. You know, here it is. You know, granted just today, the latest addition to the Cupertino-based tech giant's stable of intellectual property could be the mother of all smartphone patents, writes Fandroid's Kevin Krause. The effects could be swift and lethal. On the other side, patently Apple's Jack Percher doesn't hold back. Let's see, in 2007, Samsung, HTC, Google, and all the others in the industry didn't have a smartphone with the likes of Apple's iPhone features. They didn't have the solutions that Apple eloquently brought to market to make a smartphone truly smart. Apple carefully and meticulously crafted a full end-to-end smartphone solution. So when the copycats and their followers whine in public and on blogs that Apple should learn to compete instead of initiate litigation, I bowl over with laughter. You know, there's points on both sides of it. Writing from a relatively neutral corner, Wired's Christina Bonington quotes Tim Cook's remarks that this year's All Things D, quote, "From our point of view, it's important that Apple not be the developer for the world. We can't take all of our energy and all of our care and finish the painting, then have someone else put their name on it." I think what that means is the mother of all patent, the mother of all software patents guy is probably a lot closer to the mark on what's going to happen. So we'll keep an eye on that one. Now, again, that may just mean that somebody's going to have that Google and some of these other companies, instead of just, you know, if they really are just sponging their interfaces off of Apple, then they need to get off the stick and make their own. So we'll see what happens with that. Again, it's just kind of, I don't know. There's enough patent trollery that I don't know what I think on this one. In other news, you know, Verizon had the shared data plan. Didn't, you know, their details came out. Now AT&T's got a shared data plan, which they have the advantage of watching Verizon and maybe learning some stuff from that. Theirs are called the mobile share plans, work basically the same way as Verizon's share everything plans, which were announced last month. And here's the sad part with it. You know, this is where basically multiple users can get a bucket of data and then share it, so that you're paying for a big batch of data and then you can use it across multiple devices, whether you're whether by yourself or with other people. Just like Verizon's offerings, AT&T's plans will not be cheap. The mobile share plans will begin to be offered in late August, offering unlimited minutes for phone calls and unlimited text messages. Okay, that's not bad. They work with up to 10 devices, one of which must be a smartphone. So the way it works is if you go into the mobile share plan, you have to pay a monthly fee for each smartphone that you have tied to the bucket of shared data. The larger the data plan, the less expensive the monthly smartphone fee will be. So the basic one is a charge of $45 per smartphone. So, you know, you have three phones, you can do the math, tied to 1 gig of data at $40 a month. So that means one phone by itself, you're paying $95. But if you opt for a 20 gig shared data bucket, you'll pay for $30 per smartphone tied to a $200 monthly data plan. Wow, so you save that $10 a month for the smartphone fee, but you get you do get 20 gigs of data if you need it, if you have that many people together. On top of that, users will have to pay monthly fees for non-smartphone devices tied to the shared plans, which clocks in at $30 for each basic non-smartphone handset, $20 per laptop or air card, and $10 per tablet or gaming device, such as Sony's PS Vita. The larger the data bucket is, the smaller the per gig price is. 1 gig is $40 a month, 4 gigs is $70, 6 gigs is $90, 10 is $120, 10 gigs is $120, 15 gigs is $160 a month. I don't know, well, you can't see it, obviously, this is not even radio, but I'm wincing at each of these as the numbers go up, and I'm sure you are too. 20 gigs is $200, like I mentioned earlier. AT&T will charge $15, which is the same price as Verizon, for every gig of data consumed past the monthly allotment on the mobile share plans. So is it cheaper than what they're already offering? In some cases, a little. In most cases, not at all. Thanks. Currently, a smartphone user on AT&T could opt for a plan that costs $40 a month for 450 minutes of talk with unlimited mobile-to-mobile minutes, another $20 for unlimited text messages, and then an extra $30 for 3 gigs of data. So that's $90 a month, not including, you know, taxes and that stuff. If you wanted to add a tablet, then you put another $30 in for 3 gigs of data for that device. So you're paying $120 a month, and you'd have 6 gigs of data. Now on the shared data plan to get the same thing, with one tablet and one phone and 6 gigs of data, the monthly cost would be $135, which is $15 more than having the same two devices on two separate AT&T contracts. So AT&T doesn't feel like this is the point of this isn't to save you any money. Rather, they're trying to offer you they're offering you the unlimited text messaging, unlimited calling, if you're blowing through your minutes, and eliminating the separate fee for turning your smartphone into a mobile hotspot. So that's what you could get. In every scenario, this is from Wired, that they worked out, a subscriber's bill will remain the same or go up a bit when moving from device-specific AT&T plans to shared data plans. You know, here's my thought on it, and this isn't in the article. It seems like you may want to. There may be a place to go for a, just get a regular phone, and then a tablet with a data plan. You know, especially with the 7-inch ones that you could carry around and pretty well without it being too big a hassle. Like, say the Nexus 7 or the rumored, you know, iPad 7-inch or Kindle Fire or whatever. You get that with a 3G or 4G setup. And you're going to save yourself a ton of money on your data side because they charge less for those. And then some of these plans, either the pay-aheads or some of these others for just voice and text, the prices are dropping on those. So, you know, it may be worth going to multiple devices. It's one of these things where it may be worth it to have the multiple devices and give up a tiny bit of the convenience of having them all rammed into one little tiny device, so that they do what they do best. But that's up to you and up to everybody as they figure out if they want to pay that kind of bucks for their stuff. In Microsoft news, we got a few Microsoft stories. They have set the official Windows 8 release date. I'm sure now people will start lining up behind Microsoft stores or something. It will be launching in October. The official date is October 26th, so you'll be free for Halloween. Consumers have around 3 months to test drive the release preview to see if the revamped OS is right for you. Of course, for a limited time, if you upgrade from an older version of Windows, it only costs you $40. So if you purchase a brand new Windows 7 computer, if you after June 2nd, so any time now, you'll be able to upgrade to a Windows 8 Pro for a mere $15. You can get a backup DVD for $15 plus shipping and handling. If you don't want to go online, a DVD version of the upgrade to Windows Pro will be available for $70 during the launch promotion. Both the online and offline upgrade promotions end at the end of January. So then there's some Microsoft marketing stuff. The other thing to go with it to, I'm guessing, help push people to make their move is Office 2013 has been announced for the PC. They're not changing anything for the Mac yet, apparently. Microsoft's been all about trading in tradition for change with Windows 8, and the next version of Microsoft Office is following suit. They previewed their next version of Office, which includes Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and Outlook, and they do have a customer preview, just like on Windows 8. Steve Ballmer said, to quote, "This is the most ambitious release of Microsoft Office we have ever done." So the interface is a ribbon, which is core Office 2010. So if you hated that, then you're going to get no love from Office 2013. The ribbon on the top of the program contains visual indications and graphics of tools. They apparently have optimized things for touch, because Windows 8 was designed primarily for tablets, apparently, supposedly. So it will work on all types of computers. You can swipe across documents in Word, presentations in PowerPoint. You can pinch and zoom around the documents. Ballmer pointed out a number of new features, including the ability to instant message in Outlook and a new presenter view in PowerPoint that lets you see your notes during a presentation without revealing them on the big screen. Beyond the new interface, there's some new apps that they've put in, including, you know, mostly stuff that Microsoft's, acquired. Skype and Yammer are going to be directly integrated into the new suite. Skype for phone calls will come with Office. And if you sign up for Skype using the PC, you'll get 60 minutes of Skype World Minutes every month. Yammer, which I've not heard of, is also being integrated. It's a service which is a private social network for businesses. And they're pulling out all the stops. They're going social. Each Office application has a people card, which lets you see information about your contacts and brings in activity feeds from their Facebook and LinkedIn accounts. Could be convenient. But the biggest change might be cloud. Of course, you got to hit all the social, touch, tablet, cloud, social. Yeah, they're pretty much they went down the list. With SkyDrive, Microsoft's online storage system, users can grab their documents from anywhere. Additionally, with new roaming capabilities, when you're logged into Office, your settings will be synced across all your devices, including laptops, tablets, and even Windows Phone smartphones. So all 20 of you that buy those will be very happy, I'm sure. Microsoft will offer new editions of Office 365, its cloud-based versions of the software, which provide an interface that runs in a browser. They're adding, they're giving an extra 20 gigs of SkyDrive storage and an Office 365 version for small businesses that will have shared calendars, business-grade email, and HD web conferencing, but they haven't announced the pricing. Office 2013 will be included with Windows RT, the version of Windows for tablets that are powered by ARM processors. They're lower powered, than Intel's processors. And older versions of Windows programs will not run on ARM tablets, but they haven't announced the price of Office 2013 for Intel computers yet either. So plenty of Microsoft changes and different things coming out. Obviously, one of the key things is Office 2013 ain't going to run on older operating systems. It's not going to work on XP. And so there may be a lot of people that if they are trying to stay up with, Office are going to have to make the big change and go up to Windows 8 and some of that, especially what happens whenever there's a new Office, you start getting emails with attachments, in business, you start getting emails with attachments that you can't read because they don't have the new Office. And so you have to go out and upgrade that, and then there's the cascading effect of hardware, software, all the other changes that go with it, which a Microsoft, I call it the Microsoft two-step, you know, where you upgrade your operating system because you got a new computer, and, oh, your old version of Office doesn't run on that, so you have to upgrade that. Or if you've been holding on to your older computer with the operating system, then the new Office doesn't run on that operating system, so now you have to update. So I'm sure that's part of why they want to make it as not painful as possible with the low upgrade price for the operating system part. But it'll be interesting to see if this is a big successful thing or not. In other news from back in the days when Microsoft was so dominant and powerful, there's in the European Union, there is a Microsoft investigation about browser issues. The EU has caught a whiff of alleged misconduct on Microsoft's part, and it's dragging Windows 8 under the hot lights. Though Microsoft moved swiftly earlier this week to acknowledge and remedy the technical glitch that prevented users from selecting alternate browsers on early 2011 Win 7 machines, it now faces similar claims from third parties regarding its upcoming Win 8 tablets. According to Reuters, the European Commission's broadening its investigation to encompass allegations that Redmond is blocking the install of rival browsers on WinRT tablets running ARM chips and withholding access to the full APIs. Oops. Sounds like, you know, when they tried to go back to their old ways, didn't think about it, and they're getting caught. So not a good move and not a good situation for Microsoft. Now on to other things. What would an info shot be without iPhone rumors of, I don't know, one sort or a dozen? there's been a few rounds of rumors since last we spoke. The screen on the iPhone 4S compared to the next generation iPhone, supposedly, according to the Wall Street Journal, the next iPhone currently being manufactured by Asian component makers, keep that one in mind for a minute, will arrive this fall with a thinner screen than ever before, thanks to the combined might of Sharp LG Display and Japan Display Inc. Quote, the technology integrates touch sensors into the LCD, making it unnecessary to have a separate touchscreen layer, explains Display Search analyst Hiroshi Hayase on the new in-cell technology. Quote, the absence of the layer, usually about half a millimeter thick, not only makes the whole screen thinner, but the quality of displayed images would improve, unquote. The in-cell technology comes at a convenient time for Apple, as Samsung is pushing organic light-emitting displays, OLED, as a key feature of its latest Galaxy S3 Android handset, which has a 4.8 screen, yet is even thinner than the 4S, the iPhone 4S. So it could either, you know, the thinner screen could either make the device slimmer, or they could have extra room to put in other components or make, you know, use thicker batteries or do those kinds of things. One thing is that in-cell touchscreens are harder to manufacture than conventional LCD screens. It said in the report, the people familiar with the situation said that LCD makers are finding the manufacturing process challenging and time-consuming as they scramble to achieve high yield rates. So there's that. But then, oh wait, the rumor says that it's already being built, except there's the other rumor that says it's not, and that Apple is still testing the LTE and other things. The Boy Genius report says their rumor is that it's still being, the engineering work is still being done, and so the manufacturing ain't happening yet. So there's your conflicting rumors. Nobody's got the conflicting rumor that the next generation iPhone will have a smaller screen and be a lot thicker than it was. But that's about the only thing that happened. And finally, kind of new, different tech, who saw this one sort of coming? Nobody. Instead of silicon or magnetic storage, you know, like SSDs and stuff, Micron has announced production of the first commercial cell phone phase change memory modules, PCM, a type of flash RAM that works by changing a crystal solid to an amorphous state. They're 1 gig chips They share a circuit board with 512 megs of standard volatile memory and just enough to go into feature phones for now. I mean, basically a gig and a half. But the company claims it will eventually offer larger modules for smartphone and tablet storage as well. The thing about PCM, it could scale to much faster speeds than conventional NAND flash, since it doesn't require a time-sapping erase before rewriting. And with read speeds of 400 megabytes per second, it's already into regular flash territory while still just a first-generation product. If the tech gets even quicker, PCM could even replace volatile RAM, allowing more secure storage in case of a power loss and reducing device costs and power usage. That means the glassy new kid could eventually bump silicon-based storage altogether, possibly ending its 40-year-plus reign as the king of the memory substrates. So we'll definitely keep an eye on that one. It is early days, but having a shipping commercial product is a good step on if you're willing to show a technology and show how well it works. And that's the news.
All right. Well, back to our internet broadcast.
Back to filling the space. So you guys are just listening. You have checking the radio out in the lobby to see if things are still off or just nobody's told you that it's changed.
Well, we're not checking that radio. I was just out there a minute ago and it still wasn't broadcasting. But as far as I know, it's down. I would imagine those meters that Groovehouse is talking about would start flipping if that came back online.
Yeah, but the meters in here aren't showing any.
What happens if we push this button?
Can you hear me now?
So that the question now is, are we recording for podcast?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
I'm fairly positive that we are. I think they get that.
That's local, off the board.
Off the board or off the stream. They stream it somewhere, I don't know.
Okay.
Somehow.
Yeah, I think there's a machine in the building that gets that stuff and sends it to the server, because they can't do our old trick where we had back in Jay's Neosoft days where we had a receiver tied to the audio in on a on a machine on a server there to do our were one of the earliest shows to be broadcast live online. Yeah, to Zing back in the day.
MPEG or MP3 broadcast streaming.
The first show were real audio, right?
No.
I thought at some point your format was a real
Windows
media,
Live,
real auto.
Windows Media. It wasn't real audio, though.
No.
We were Zing to start, and then another company picked us up and did the Windows Media streaming for a while, and all those archives are lost.
Just Texas.net.
Texas.net, yeah. And then they did it off of a radio or something here in the studio, and now it's all magic now. So tons of archives, so you can always go back and listen to those. They're not very interesting.
Wimsock, DLL.
Wow. Well, I'm guessing, listening to the 2005 edition of the show is probably not.
It's not as compelling as you might think.
Have you tried blowing on it and reseating it?
The internet's a fad. It's not going to last.
That's the prison program. Wait. All right. So 713-526-5738. If you can hear us and you want to be on the air with us tonight, we're happy to take your calls. We'll need something to help us fill the next hour and a half of Technology Bytes broadcast.
Everyone on IRC, we just have to say that their computer works and they're competent. I mean, that's the thing. Pretty much anyone streaming probably has a grip on things. It could be like a talk about, whatever you want to show. It doesn't have to be a computer question, I guess.
That's true. We could take topics. We could get into philosophical or political discussions about technology. I don't know. Maybe we could play some Johnny Cash.
We could play music.
You know what? Actually, yeah, I actually do have something really cool.
You have something really cool?
Yeah.
Hmm.
And I don't have to worry about FCC regulations, so it's all good.
Next up, F Your Mother, bye.
Now, this is actually, it's really nice.
Is it? And you're going to play it off the speaker on your phone?
Yeah. I don't think I can.
Wow.
Well, I could unplug Pete and then plug line in but
I see a call coming in. That could be a
something. Oh, that could be something.
That could be something right there.
Oh, I can't play it while he's talking on the phone.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Greenhouse is
to work.
Yeah, but he can get that call and put it on hold, and then you can
play. Oh, yeah,
it.
Okay, okay.
So you could, you know, you should have been a little quicker on the draw for that. All right, well, if you're listening on the web and wondering why things are a little tame, then it's because we're not broadcasting live on the air. Flick is laughing now, so something good's happening. But we're having some kind of transmitter difficulties. You know, it's in keeping with true technology rights tradition that something goes wrong. This one is epic in terms of fail for the show, because usually it's just a struggle to get Skype working or to get the phone switched over during the fundraiser or something like that. But this time, we're not broadcasting at all.
We didn't even need lightning this time.
No, apparently...
We can definitely let this guy wait.
All right, what do you all got right,
here,
for us?
Here, this is... I want to play two, but this is the first one. I won't play the whole thing, but just wait to see when you figure it out.
If I figure it out, I may not be cool enough to
play. Oh, wow. It's CeeLo.
Right, so you know, recognize the song. All right.
Now, who does that?
This is a guy who goes by Inverse Phase. But I just saw this one, but what I really wanted to get from him, the reason I got it was
now, was that for like this. An MP3 you have on your phone, or is that like an actual MIDI file or something?
No. He did all these with chips, like from old video games.
Are they for sale?
Yeah, I bought them.
Oh, shoot me a link or wherever you got them. Yeah.
This is actually what I bought though. This is what I actually bought.
Is it Nine Inch Nails?
It's like an animal. I may not know the pop culture reference.
Had like a hole?
Yeah.
I think I've heard this. I think I've seen this online, yeah. Did he have a Kickstarter thing by any chance? Is this the same guy or a different guy, I wonder?
He did. He did a Kickstarter for this album.
Yeah. I know this guy now. Okay. That's super cool.
Wow. Anyway.
I guessed it in the first few bars.
He actually did the whole... That's what he did the Kickstarter for. It was the whole
Nine Inch Nails, right?
Pretty Hate Machine album.
Yeah. Wow.
Like, it's every song on there done with, I don't know if it's 8 or 10 different chipset systems.
Yeah,
from different...
yeah. A lot of 8-bit stuff there,
I mean,
yeah.
some of them are like NES plus, like, a mod for a certain game, you know, but he did an Atari chip,
Didn't he call the album something else? It was Petty Hate Machine, he had some other name for it, right? There
pretty,
was
Pretty Hate Machine.
Pretty Hate Machine, that's what it was.
No,
cool.
Everything's a pun, like Headlike IO, Atari Balai, Downloading It, Synctified, Kinda I Want 2A03, which is the chipset that most of that's based on, Token Ring Finger.
So it's out now? I think I gave it to you way back, and I think I can go get a download now, maybe.
I bought it. I actually bought a physical copy and got the download also.
Did you already get the physical copy?
Yeah.
Burn me a copy.
He's made his money, obviously, on Kickstarter. It's fine.
This was paid for by somebody else who donated to him. So we all really kind of own a part of this. For your viewing pleasure, I recommend that you go do a Google search on the rich kids of Instagram. It's a new Tumblr.
Yep.
Mm. It actually will make you physically ill.
Do I want to look at this or
it's not? No, it's not like disgusting, like, you know. No.
But just like, is it like 8-year-olds wrecking Mercedes?
No, it's
or
not
what
goatsy
is it?
Disgusting.
Helicopters.
It's opulent disgusting.
You know, it only goes to show that only rich people can afford iPhones and helicopters.
And private planes.
And private planes.
And big pools and vacations.
All right. So 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. We do have a call in the queue. And this call in the queue actually did sit on IRC that you should host. You should do a live broadcast from your car afflicted with a light show. What is this? What does the 8-bit stuff do to your speaker lights? Or are they
the same thing as other music? It's just based on sound. So.
Right. But does it feel better when you're playing that in your car and you're driving around at night and the lights are going off?
Yeah, no, it's enjoyable.
Is it? All right. It's very, you know, old meets new.
Yeah.
Kind of new meets really new. All right, Groove House?
Yes.
Who do we have up, as if I didn't know?
Up first on the web show.
On the web only show.
The web only show.
Safe for the internet.
It's Kojo.
Sanitized for your protection. Hey, Kojo.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Not much. How are you?
I'm all right. So here's my question. I am, with the Mountain Lion upgrade coming up, my MacBook Pro is just barely old enough such that it won't take the Mountain Lion upgrade. So Lion is the end of the line for me as far as...
The end of the Lion.
Anyway, move on.
Well, that would have been a great joke to go out over the air. Too bad it's an internet-only joke.
Exactly. So the I'm looking at maybe getting another machine at some point. But now, you know, the landscape now is very different from when it was. When I got this MacBook Pro in early 2007, there was basically, you know, there was MacBook, MacBook Pro, and then other desktop machines. But now there's the Air, MacBook Air, the MacBook Pro, Pro with Retina, the iPad. So like, if you guys were going to get a new machine, like a new laptop now, because I got the midline 15-inch MacBook Pro back in 2007. So if you guys were going to get a new Mac or either a Mac machine or a Mac laptop, what would you get? Because I've got one, go to Mountain Lion. So,
well, it depends. Are you buying or am I buying?
How much money are we working with here? Yeah.
That's a very good question.
$7.
Sold.
For $73, what would you buy? So here's the thing. I mean, when I bought this one, it was like the midline model was like $2,500. But now I'm looking at like the MacBook Pros. Like,
$27.
I mean, they're starting like at $1,200 now, whereas like... When I bought this MacBook Pro, the MacBook Pro started at, like, 2000.
Right.
So,
Well, I mean, when I went out looking for a laptop, and a Mac laptop, I was looking for something to supplement my home computing experience. So I didn't need anything, you know. I certainly didn't want a 17-inch. It was just, that was just too much real estate. And the 13-inch, the entry-level 13-inch MacBook Pro, they still were making the MacBook at the time, but they had the MacBook Pro came out at a price point that was very close to the MacBook, which was around $900, $999 on sale or something, and I thought that was reasonable. Right now, I'm looking at the new MacBooks, and they just seem more expensive to me.
They're a little ahead of their time because the tech that they've put into the new MacBook Pro, it's just a little on the expensive side. I mean, the starting price is really high. I think you should go and pick them up. I mean, I really wanted a 13-inch, or actually rather a 15-inch Pro with Retina display. But after carrying an Air for the last couple of years, I just couldn't see myself picking that up every day. I mean, there's no way.
Is this a machine that you use as your, you know, it's your one true machine, you do everything on the one machine, or do you work at home a lot at a desk, or how do you use it?
It'll probably be a replacement for what I've got now, but what I've got now is my one true machine, so it's the one machine I use for everything. The other option I'm considering is maybe looking at a MacBook Air, or in having this be like having my current machine sort of stay at home, because I've got like a big hard drive in this one. Maybe having this one sit here and having the MacBook Air be sort of like a secondary machine to this one. But yeah, in the past, what I've done, I bought laptops as basically sort of my one true machine. So, you know, that's the only computer I've had. So,
well, I think that for sure anything that's, you know, and this, we've said this about other computers in the past, but if you've got a 2007 MacBook Pro, right?
And yeah,
whatever the entry level Air is going to blow that away in terms of processing speed and all of that, but not so much on the necessarily on the storage.
Yeah.
Because with all the new MacBooks and the SSDs, you're you're going to pay through the nose to get any real storage on any of these things. So you're looking at paying some serious money for it. I like the MacBook Pro that's out right now. The problem I would have with the MacBook Pro is that even though I don't need it, I would feel less of a man if I didn't buy the one with the Retina display.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just don't see buying a new Mac with it out there right now. The between the MacBook Pro and the MacBook Pro Retina, it just seems like, I mean, although the MacBook Pro is a great machine and way better than probably the what I have right now, I feel like I'm buying something secondary and something lesser.
Apple does such a good job at making people feel that way.
I know.
The tough part to me, I don't have any problems with understanding with feeling safe in my masculinity. So I also look at it and go, okay, MacBook Pro with the Retina display, I could buy a really decent iMac to have at home and a MacBook Air to carry around wherever I wanted. And to me, that trumps, at least from, you know, again, it depends how you want to use stuff. That trumps the whole carry around the equivalent of an iMac in a box with you all the time with the weight and all that stuff.
Are you saying that a current iMac and a current MacBook Air for the cost of a MacBook Pro with Retina?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you get the 21-inch iMac is $1,200.
True.
And a decent 4 gig Air, but if you're wanting to tighten up, if you want to get a little more for your money, if you get refurbs, you could probably get a refurbed 27-inch and a refurbed Air for about $2,500, and you'd have a 27-inch iMac and a 13-inch MacBook Air with 128 gig solid state drive in it.
Well, that sounds really appealing too, but I'm like Kojo though. I previously when I had bought my iMac and I really like my iMac. Before I had a MacBook Pro, I wasn't using a laptop extensively, but I found, and I never really saw the appeal of having a laptop as a primary machine, but now I really embrace the whole mobile computing, being able to be away from a desk and use a nice computer to actually do real work on, not just for browsing.
Nobody says that. I've not heard anybody who said that you can't do that on a MacBook Air with a 13-inch screen.
I mean, that's kind of my primary machine. I plug it into a big, like, 30-inch monitor at work, and I dock it. But, you know, I don't game on or anything like that. I've got another machine for things like that. But this does just fine for me. And really, with the solid-state drive, things like, you know, like Eclipse and, like, really kind of heavy tool chains load up super fast. Because it's not so much down to the processor. It's much more down just to, you know, hitting the hard drive really quickly.
I would think at this point the Air would be a good contender for a general machine.
It's comparable with the Southbridge and with what they've done to the last Rev. They're fine.
You're looking at the Mac Pro, the Mac site right now, the Apple site right now. On the MacBook Air, what is the entry level hard drives on that?
$999 I was going to give you the storage on there. Well, they're making it
128 gigs is the base one, and then it's 256 usually for the.
Yeah, 60.
Is 128 still the base?
Or yes, they haven't changed that, I don't think.
So it should give you the option. You should be able to go back up to the top. Mm-hmm. If you could do that.
Hold on.
Go up. The drive should be one of the first things.
Yeah, right? It's 128. Oh, wait, actually,
no, it's locked at 64.
They changed it. They made it worse on the 11-inch.
Yeah, 64 gigs of flash storage for entry, but that's $999.
That's on an 11.
All right, but let's look at the 13-inch.
13-inch?
Yeah, because if you're
128 is entry.
128 is entry, and what's the upgrade to get that up to? And can you get past 256 on the Air?
Let's see.
I don't think you can. So
what I would do, especially if I was using multiple computers with it and buying new stuff, is invest in a Thunderbolt external drive.
Yeah.
Because you could move that you could carry that with you, it wouldn't weigh anything, and you could switch it from place to place and carry all your main documents on there.
Yeah, seriously, going from 256 gigs of flash to 512 gigs of flash, it's $500. So that's really not worth it.
Yeah,
to
see,
me.
I mean, if I were buying one right now, I would really like the MacBook Pro with Retina, but the price point's just pretty high right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I would probably, even though I would like it, I think it's a little pricey. So I would probably settle for getting a 13 MacBook Air. That's probably
what I was traveling a lot, where I was going to be away from home and really needed to kind of bring everything with me like that, then I would seriously consider the Mac Pro with the Retina display. But for the kind of traveling I've done in the recent past and some of that stuff, I've found that the Air is more than capable of doing the kinds of things I need to do. It'll do Photoshop and all that.
I think the Air is a fantastic laptop in terms of capabilities for its ability to browse the web, process software, do all of that. I could probably run Lightroom on it without any issue. My only drawback for me is storage. And that's what's killed me on the last. Even thinking about getting an Air before the new one came out, it's just on the cusp of not really being enough storage to offload a ton of photos. Like when I'm on a trip or doing a photo shoot, I want to be able to offload 16 to 32 gigs worth of images, and that really is a huge chunk of that drive space.
You can get a SD card that'll go on a MacBook Air, so you could get a nice big card to stick it on to store that stuff.
Well, I mean, is there an SD slot on that? Because that doesn't look
I believe like, that is it right there.
That does not look like an SD
what
slot.
What do you think that is? Yeah, it is.
You think?
Yeah.
Break my SD card out.
That's it. I mean, I've had mine for a little while. I got the 254, or I guess it was closer to 240 gigs solid state, and I only have, I've got less than 10 gigs free. I've got to constantly manage what I've got on my Air.
We're on the Air?
Whoa.
We're on the radio. Okay.
I hope all that cussing didn't go over the Air.
All right. Yeah, there we go.
Wow. That's kind of cool. You want to eject it properly?
I don't think since we've imported it, we're fine. But yeah, let me just make sure.
It's going to show up as on your desktop.
There we go. No,
your data has been erased.
Well, that's kind of cool. The SD slot on the side of the computer is certainly a compelling thing. I guess if you were going to go with it, and I guess Kojo's still listening to us. If you were going to go with a MacBook Pro and you wanted to fully exploit the technology for an external drive, do they have Sandy Bridge or external drives or whatever the new is it?
Thunderbolt.
Oh yeah,
that's what yeah.
They have Thunderbolt drives.
Yeah, you can get a 1 terabyte Thunderbolt. I think for about around $300 at the Apple store.
The cool thing also is that they have the newest monitor is a Thunderbolt monitor. So if you just plug up that one port from the monitor to a laptop, it'll actually put it on there, and you can keep a keyboard and mouse hooked up to the monitor, and that's nice.
Yeah, so I'm thinking maybe. For what you're doing, Kojo, I don't know, is storage an issue for you?
Right now it's not. I've got
I know you got a big hard drive, but do you need the big hard drive?
Right now I've got a 500 gig hard drive, and honestly, right now I've still got 250 gigs free. I think at this point. That's with me doing absolutely no management of the hard drive. So that's what means sort of dumping whatever I did onto the hard drive. So, right. If I were to actually, try to pay attention to managing the hard drive, I'd be okay with 250, like a 256 gig hard drive or something smaller.
Well, the whole idea of mobile computing, the Air seems to be the way to go. It seems to be a very compelling device.
Well, it was funny because when it first came out, a lot of people kind of thought, they didn't necessarily think it was really expensive, but they thought, oh, this is like little niche product, niche player. But in the last, 4 or 5 years that it's been around, it's actually pretty common in reviews and industry. Like, a lot of people think now that the MacBook Air is kind of the laptop to have. Like, it's the best of all things in one package. So a lot of people think the MacBook Air is the best laptop, all-around laptop to have.
And then Pete's idea about, how you could get a MacBook Air and an iMac for the same price as a MacBook Pro Retina. It's like, that's interesting, something.
Yeah, because just plug in a drive from one to the other and carrying, your data, just make sure, you could have something that you store it mainly on the iMac and copy it to the external drive that you have with you. You still have all your data with you, but it'd be really easy to go, to throw your stuff in your bag and head out,
Yeah, because I hadn't really looked at the Mac, the iMac before, but I've been in an Apple store, the Highland Village Apple store recently, looking at them, and I'm like, you know, sort of, like I said, I hadn't really considered them before, because I was always just planning to get a laptop. I've had a laptop since, what, like 2003, so that's just where my mind goes. But now I'm thinking, well, maybe I could get an iMac, you know.
I will say this about the iMac as a caveat, since we're having this lengthy conversation about the Apple products. One thing I don't like about the iMac is that once it's no longer usable, then it's not usable in any capacity unless you buy the 27-inch, in which point the monitor can be connected to something else. So I've been looking at maybe rather than going with an iMac, going with a Mac Mini.
Okay,
that's what I have.
An external display, a good external display. That way, when it comes time to upgrade your computer, you're only upgrading the cheaper part of it. With my iMac, which is still a good machine, and which will probably get handed down to someone else when I get a new one, I'm going to either go with a 27-inch or go with a Mac Mini and an external monitor.
To throw in yet another option for
so complex.
For what Jay described, though, there's been some articles. You know, when there were rumors that the Mac Pro was going to get updated because it hasn't really been changed for quite a while, and it got a minor punch of some features. But building doing your own Hackintosh has gotten way easier, and the pricing to get the equivalent of kind of the Mac Pro that's about $3,500, I think, is about $1,200 to build the box. So if you've already got the monitor, you know, for not much more than a Mac Mini, you could have the power of a Mac Pro. And then down the road, if you know, when you want to upgrade, you've done just like the Mini thing. You can just swap something out with the same monitor.
Right.
And you get the power and you get the ability. You know, since you've built your own PCs before, or you've messed with that kind of stuff, it's not like it's a big stretch for you.
Well, listen, we're coming up to the station break, so we're going to have to cut this short. But,
no problem.
Hopefully we filled your head with plenty of ideas, Jojo.
We've confused you with even more options than you thought were available.
Backlit keyboards are overrated, and you can always put stuff in cloud.
I think Bear's trying to sell you his so he can get a new one.
I've got one. I've got a gently used one you can take a look at, Kojo.
I'll keep that in mind. Thank you.
All right. Have a good night, Kojo. Thanks. Your call.
No problem.
All right. Well, apparently we're back on the air. So that's coming
just in time to take a break and do a station ID.
That's right. So hopefully the signal will be getting out there and people will be tuning in for the second hour of tonight's broadcast of Technology Bites. Now I'm got the fever. I want to get a new computer. Yeah, or a camera or both.
I guess the odd thing to me, the stuff, everything works. I haven't had anything where there's that annoyance where you go,
I
wish it would do this, or I'm sitting there watching the spinning beach ball and saying, I need a new computer.
Right. It's time, so I'm going to cut you off there. That's all right. Yeah, you're listening to Technology Bites on KPFT. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Listeners support KPFT in many different ways. Some write checks and others use credit cards. But if you're spinning your wheels looking for a tax deduction, think about donating your working but unwanted car, motorcycle, boat, or truck to KPFT. You'll qualify for a tax deduction and at the same time take care of that unfinished business. To make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. We'll arrange for your vehicle to be picked up and the title transferred. Then we'll send you a receipt for your tax deduction. It's that simple to support the station you've come to rely on for alternative music, news, and public affairs programming. Again, for more information or to make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. You're tuned in to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston, radio for peace.
On Saturday, August 4th, beloved Texas musical group The Flatlanders will return to the Crichton Theater in downtown Conroe for one performance only. This year, The Flatlanders, featuring legendary Texas singer-songwriters Joe Ely, Jimmy Dale Gilmore, and Butch Hancock, celebrate their 40th anniversary with the Odessa Tapes, a collection of recordings made in 1972 and never before released to the public. During this very special performance in Conroe, the Flatlanders will preview songs from the new CD and will also have a limited number of pre-release tour copies of the CD available only at the concert. Folk Family Revival will open the show at 8 o'clock on August 4th at the Crichton Theater, located at 234 Main Street in downtown Conroe. Tickets for the Flatlanders and Folk Family Revival are now on sale at crichtontheater.org or call 936-441-7469, extension 201. Presented by the Friends of Conroe, a nonprofit organization, and KPFT Houston.
All right, welcome back to the show. There is no Barrett time.
Surprise.
Barrett was scheming to get us the hookup with MC Frontalot at the upcoming DEF CON hacking conference in Las Vegas next week.
Yes, we may. He may be hanging out with us Thursday night at our thing.
We may be able to take MC Frontalot and point him at people and get invites to special events. Yeah, you invited him, but does he have one of these? All right, so 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. We are taking your calls. I saw somebody dialing in, but now...
So how did you work into that? You know, did you say, hey, man, I was in your movie?
Oh, no, I kind of fanboyed out. Actually, it's a guy we met at DEF CON.
No, you fanboyed out?
Not totally, only to Tim, the guy that's kind of brought him to the attention. So, yeah, I was like, you know, I didn't realize I was, but then I read the stream of things that I fired off without actually giving much pause in between. And I was like, yeah, you know, yeah, let's hook it up. You came into the studio, and I was in a movie, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, wow, slow it down. I got excited. But, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember. You're the guy that talks real fast.
So, yes, hopefully we'll be hanging out with him Thursday night.
Yeah, that could only go well. I'm sure. Hanging out with people that we idolize.
We're going to be Frontalot with Frontalot for the rest of the weekend. Oh, yeah. It can't go any worse.
No.
Cannot get any worse.
Do not say that.
Don't say that it couldn't get worse. It could get worse.
I think we've only scratched the surface of how incredibly insane something like DEF CON can
be. I'm not scratching anything this trip. No massages, no back rubs. I'm done.
You know, you think it would stay in Vegas, but apparently if it's on a phone, the phone leaves Vegas.
Close stay on.
Yeah, we're destroying all phones this trip.
No phones allowed.
No phones.
In this bucket of water. Or this beer. All right. So I thought somebody was calling in, but apparently, no, that is not.
They did, but I don't know. But Groovehouse drove them away.
Yeah.
Get away from us. We're on the air now. We don't need your call. 713-526-573. So is that the hotline that rang?
It is, mm-hmm. To let us know we were on the air.
Hooray.
Hooray. Steve called.
All right, 713-526-573 if you want to be on the air with...
Maybe he's driving back from the station, from the antenna, mm-hmm. from the transmitter.
So maybe somebody wants to call in and spend an hour talking about Windows 8 or something. Yeah.
I've got the Nexus 7 right here.
Is that what that is?
That is what that is. I like it.
I thought it was your Kindle or something.
No, this is it's like the Kindle, only sexier. And it works. And it has, like, yeah, check it out.
Nexus.
I like it. That is going to make Apple come into the 7-inch dead-on-arrival tablet market.
It's got, like, a bumpy rubber grip on
yeah,
it.
Yeah. It's pretty slick. I like it.
That is kind of cool. It's,
yeah.
Is it a phone?
No. Although, that's what I want. I need, like, a 5.5-inch version of that. You know, or 4 and whatever it is. Whatever the standard 4.7-inch.
This is 7 inches.
That's 7 inches. It depends on where you measure from. But yeah, you measure from the base of it there. That's 7 inches.
I was driving through Houston.
Or maybe it's diagonally. I'm not too sure how you measure it. But they told me it was 7 inches.
It's not the length that matters.
It really depends on how you use
the
tablet.
The
yeah.
Well, this is kind of cool. So.
It's slick. It's a jelly bean is nice.
Is it jelly bean?
Uh-huh. It's four. It's already up to, I think, 411 or 412 already.
How much is this device?
$200, if we can say that.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, they're taking a little bit of a loss on that. That's their two models. There's an 8 gig and a 16 gig. The 8 gig is $200. I think the 16 is $249. And they gave me
is
like
that
a...
the data plan?
No, there's so that here's the thing. There's no data.
It's Wi-Fi
only. So you've got to be near a hotspot.
So it's hotspot only.
Hotspot only, but they gave me like $25 in the Google Play Store to buy whatever. I could even buy a case for it if
you,
I wanted
did
to.
You I got it from
Google, so I knew it was shipped right away. And the eerie thing was, I opened it up and it knew who I was. All it no, seriously, all it wanted was my Google, my Gmail password. Like it was like, "Hello, Barrett, put your password in here."
I'm afraid I can't do that, Barrett.
Yeah, there's like a home screen that learns. You can actually talk to it. So check this out. This is pretty weird. I didn't realize this. It started doing things. And I was like,
what's
going on?
It's the price. It makes me just want. I have an iPad.
Yeah. No, it's the thing is, yeah, they're basically selling it at cost in order to get it in the market. And because from everything people talk about is that basically Google had been watching all these people come out with modded, like, not good versions of tablets and getting crushed by the iPad. And so finally, I guess somebody in Google said, the only way we're going to make this market jump for us is if we put out something that is really good and we get it out there and get people talking and it's a quality product.
Show them how it's done.
I mean, it's based on the Asus, though. I mean, another device, but Google spec'd out this one.
They did a lot of improvements to the user interface. I think is it called Butter? Something like that?
With an H.
With an H. Is it really Butter?
I don't know.
No, I think it is, to where it just made like the UI a lot smooth. More like Butter. Yeah. So this is cool. Check it out. Google Technology Bytes. And it goes, Google. Yeah, that's kind of cool. It's I don't even know what it is. It's like this home Google thing.
Does it talk back to you?
What's happening?
Oh, the search thing went on its own. It just listens for you to say Google.
Oh, so you say Google?
Yeah, I've got to pull the thing up, though. Hold on.
If you yell it,
so the awesome thing is, now that you know this, when you're walking by people that have those tablets,
you can say Google, Jay Lee, Twitter.
You just like say Google and then say something like horribly offensive. So they just like a Google search pops up and then, you know, their wife or girlfriend or whatever is like horribly offended at what they have on their device.
Google Goatsy.
Google Technology Bytes.
I think you might have to
when
pause.
You say when you keep
Google?
Googling things with it when you're out and about, Barrett, do you start feeling
Technology
like Inspector
Bytes.
Gadget? Google.
And it also kind of makes you sound like a senile person.
Oh, that's not good. It doesn't recognize the clever pun of Technology Bytes. It's giving me Technology Bites. Technology Bytes Radio.
Don't you have to say Google first?
Technology Bytes Radio.
Computer.
Technology Biz Radio Computer.
You're not saying Google.
It's searching.
Oh, okay. Okay. I didn't know how to play.
Well, this is... Okay, so I'm less enamored.
But, computer. Help computer.
Okay, so from the home screen, I should just be able to say Google.
No, not from there. I don't even know what screen that is. I haven't been able to figure out, but you've got to hit this, and then you hit that. Yeah. And even then, it doesn't always go. I'm not entirely sure what is going on. It might be a hidden thing. I haven't actually read any manuals on this.
Wow, it's so intuitive that the host of a technology talk show who's worked in IT for years can use it.
Well, okay, so here's
with help.
Well, you know, Barrett just got it, so he's not giving me the best tutorial.
We're just happy it's not broken.
Really,
yet.
Really, Barrett is failing right now.
No, I'm not. Jay's the one that's. It's kind of a weird thing.
It knows Barrett's voice.
Oh, yeah. But you.
But if I let go of the home button, it goes away.
Yeah, so I don't even know what that is, really. It's this weird kind of.
There's got to be a Google icon on here somewhere. There's Google right here, so I should be able to just. I could just do that, and I could hit the speaker button. And
yeah,
I
can... yeah.
Barrett, let's see, do a Barrett search here. Barrett's new Nexus. Let's see what it says for us. Barrett's new Nexus. It got the wording right. And
whoa, and I'm ripped. And oiled up.
Wow. You've been working out.
Nexus from the American Gladiator.
You've been doing some yoga.
Google thought it said, show us Barrett's.
That's not predictive search. Just
where Barrett's pecs is.
713.
Say search on.
Okay, so that's a Google voice icon on there, I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Does it have GPS?
Yes, it does.
It does.
Uh-huh. So Google Maps works. Everything works.
So if you are, say, have this connected to a hotspot.
Or you pre-cache maps now. So if you know you're going into an area, you just pre-cache maps for that area when you're near Wi-Fi, and then it picks everything up. So the only thing you can't get if you're out of Wi-Fi range is real-time traffic and you know, stuff like that. But yeah, you can get everything you need if you know that you're going to be in a certain city.
But it won't be able to triangulate your location.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's GPS. So it's got a built-in GPS.
Okay, and then you, built-in GPS. Yes. It works over the Wi-Fi.
That's so, yeah, GPS totally separate from the Wi-Fi.
It's kind of compelling. Still don't know what this is doing.
You got it. You got
a
door.
I figured it out. Okay, that's how you do it. So you press the home button. And you slide up to Google.
Oh, you slide up. Okay, we're doing the multi-finger.
Yeah, we're doing multi-touch, but it should all be one finger. So, yeah, basically, you're just bringing up. That's kind of cool. Oh, we figured it out.
When?
I'm not sure that was intuitive, though.
No, because turn power it off and power it back on. See, like...
When you power it on, it says...
That's pretty obvious. Like, it does this big splay thing of the button you're supposed to push to where it's pretty obvious what you're supposed to do. This other thing, it doesn't really give you a hint.
Like, yeah, when it starts up, it says, to Google search... Put your finger on the home button and slide it to Google.
Right, so if I bring it up to the lock screen here, or not.
So top button on the right. Yeah, on the right. They're kind of recessed.
I found it. Okay, so I could press that, and there's one for Google to go immediately to Google, and there's one for unlock.
Mm-hmm.
So if I go to unlock, it brings me to the desktop, which is kind of cool. And then I can go back to Google. That's why that does it like
uh-huh.
that.
So there's like quick...
There's a quick start button, yes.
buttons. So can you add other ones to it?
I would think so. You definitely can with mods.
You have this screen here. You have your main lock screen like you see on an Android device. And if you press that lock button, then it gives you two choices. One at the top, it says Google, so you go immediately to Google search. Or the bottom one, which unlocks the home screen. So you go to Google like that. But also, if you press the home button here, you get that Google button down there right there. And that brings up Google.
And then that Google screen actually learns about you. Like if it sees you going after movie time slot or traffic time slot, it'll actually display the information it thinks is pertinent to you.
Uh-oh, it's
kind of eerie. Oh, no.
All right. Well, that's kind of cool. So if you, for those of you listening at home, because, you know, the radio's working now, it's kind of a cool. The Nexus is the Google Nexus 7-inch tablet. So you buy that directly from Google?
Yeah, you can go directly to the Google store, or you can, I think, games.
Can I buy it on my Android phone?
Yeah. Yeah, you sure can. Yeah, actually, you buy it through that account. So just like you'd buy an app, you buy that. And I also think that Staples and maybe like either Office Max or Office Depot and GameStop had them. But I think everyone's sold out right now. Everyone's like on a week wait or so. And I think the Google store is like maybe 2 weeks behind or so. Just because they're sold out.
On the Google store?
Yeah.
713-526-5738 if you want to call it. That's pretty a compelling device because the price point. And the form factor, I mean, you feel like if you spend more money, you can get an iPad and get something larger. But I kind of like being there. That's actually a one-handed device. Mm-hmm. Unlike the iPad where you're kind of like having to figure out a way to grip it, the Google Nexus tablet is actually a one-handed device.
It's pretty much it's the exact same form factor and a little bit thinner as the, you know, the Fire or the Nook or, you know, any of the original keyboard Kindles that came out, the 7-inch Kindles. So.
All right. It makes a lot of very pleasant noises. It's not like overly, you know, charming or anything. It's just kind of, I don't know how to describe it.
Chewy nose.
Chewy nose. Is that your phone, Groovehouse?
Nope, sorry.
Oh, no. All right, Bear, hold up the device. I'm trying to...
713-526-5738 if you've got a technology question for Technology Bites. Give us a call. We're on the air.
We really are.
We really are.
All right, turn it to me. There we go.
Yeah. Working,
Jay. Let's pull up something cool. We had Jay Maynard and Tim O'Reilly.
Aim all 7 inches there we go. Right at me. What is that?
It's you, Tim Riley, and Tron Guy all pulled up in social media on the same page.
Me?
You, Tim O'Reilly, and Tron Guy.
Wow. So you got Jay Maynard.
We got a Jay sandwich almost.
Tim should be in the middle.
Yeah. Oh, this is neat, too, so check it out. So before, when you had to move things around, they just swap like that. Whoops. Get it to where it goes. So it moves things around for you. You don't have to juggle icons around anymore. It'll actually move them around kind of like a little bit like, dare I say it, how Apple does it.
It's actually a pretty cool little device. All right, looks like we have somebody on the holding lines on the queue there. And Flickton, well, I don't know what Flickton's doing, but he's not paying enough attention.
Oh, and then last thing. He's this working. Was my homage to George Takei.
Oh, my. Is that an Orkut?
Yeah, Orkut and MySpace, which I never used, but I had to have the Oh My thing on one of the home screens, so.
There's a MySpace app and an Orkut
Yes,
app.
There is, yeah.
Lord almighty. Oh, my. All right, 713-526-5738, Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who do we have?
All right, up next on the show, we're going to take Elliot.
Elliot, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Hi, yes. I was wondering if you guys had any recommended SSD drives. I've been wanting to put one into my gaming computer.
What are the other specs on the gaming computer? Like, how cutting edge is this thing?
I just built it last week. It's the i5-3570K, and it's pretty... I've overclocked it a bit. It's got a pretty nice Radeon card. It's good. It's funny when I go to the Windows Experience Index, which is, I know it's a, goofy benchmark, but it's like 7.7, 7.9, 7.9, as like 5.9 or whatever. So
nice.
I think I want a hard drive upgrade.
Yeah, I just built a gaming machine not even two or three weekends ago, and I think I wound up going with OCZ SSD, which is pretty good. It's like kind of an entry level gaming rig. There were a couple of them, I want to say, at least they might not be on sale anymore, but they were on sale over at Micro Center, some of the SSD drives.
Yeah, I saw there's a Samsung that was for sale recently. It was on sale like on Amazon first, then on Newegg, and then on Tiger Direct. And now none of them are on sale, so I don't know. The Samsung was kind of expensive, not on sale, and so now it's not on sale again. I'm not sure if you guys had any.
Is this going to be like your main drive? You're going to have like another mechanical hard drive back there for data storage?
Yeah, I figure. I think I'm looking at like a 120 gig because I don't know. I only really need the OS and a few apps and maybe the game I'm playing a lot currently, and I have multiple terabytes of other platter-based storage.
I mean, you could probably run pretty lean. I mean, you could definitely run as lean as 128. I would say don't do it. I'd maybe go in 256 or 240. But go out to Tom's Hardware. Everything kind of changes, and they've actually got like a best SSD for gaming thread. And they're looking like they've actually got a fastest best SSD for 200-ish. We were talking about that, but that's probably the best thing to do is pick out like two or three drives or just, go and see what's on sale and then just go see what the benchmarks on those are and, kind of base it off that. But they look like they're kind of all in the packs. There's definitely like the business class and there's kind of the gaming class and there's like the kind of the home kind of lower end class. So just kind of, if you get in that class, you should be okay.
On the plus side, timing wise, Intel just announced price cuts on its SSDs and that should put pressure on other companies, so you may want to, this may be one where taking your time over the next two or three weeks might save you some extra money.
Yeah, I'm fine waiting. So,
and if it's going into a gaming rig, the only thing that matters is what color it is. So,
all right, so great, it'll be red. Thanks.
All right,
thanks for your call.
Thanks, bye.
All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight here on Technology Bytes. We have all of our lines open, and we're broadcasting out to not just the World Wide Web, but also to radios, to transistors and stuff, picking up the FM, the frequency modulation, and bringing you this technology talk live right into your living room. And the phone rings in Groovehouse. Turns his head and he witnesses the phone ringing, and then he takes off his headphones and he figures out how to answer the phone and gets ready to put another call in the queue. This narration brought to you by the hosts of Technology Bytes. What is he pointing at? Is there a problem in there?
I think they're about to launch the missiles.
All right, okay, while we're waiting for the call to get screened, on the world of the Xbox, I have kind of played myself out on Skyrim.
Are you done
with the mod? Yeah.
Have you burned out, or have you gotten to where you've done everything you can possibly do?
It's just, I could certainly start over and play different kinds of characters and do different kinds of things. I just don't know if it has that much appeal to me. But what I have done is I went looking for other games in the vein, and I found Fallout New Vegas. And that is kind of, it's, you know, same kind of open-ended play, and you're running around and you're doing stuff, and the gameplay is similar, but instead of having, you know, bows and arrows and swords and stuff, you have rickety post-apocalyptic weapons that you have to maintain.
Oh, that's cool. Does it have kind of the same kind of mood? Not necessarily the same mood, but does it create a mood in the same way that Skyrim creates?
Yeah, it creates a mood in the way that Skyrim creates a mood. You have this world, you have people that you interact with. It's got this, because Fallout, I haven't played any of the other Fallout games, but this one is set in the Arizona desert, you know, or like near Las Vegas in Nevada desert in the wastelands. So you're kind of, it's got this whole southwestern feel. You have this mechanical device that you keep track of all your inventory and stuff and your stats on, and you can actually turn on this radio, and it's kind of this country radio kind of playing this southwest flavored kind of thing. And I've heard, you know, they've got, must have some real music license in there. I heard some Marty Robbins when I was playing Six Gun on his hip and that kind of stuff. So it's
getting stuff on a video game soundtrack is a big deal now. It's like, you know, having your songs in a movie soundtrack. Even though I know the movies pay the artists for that, I think that artists are a lot more, they think it's cool now, so they might even, you know, cut them a little bit more slack as far as royalties goes, what I've heard.
But it's a lot of fun.
Speaking of video games, there actually is, and you'd have to Google it for yourselves, but there actually is a I think it's a YouTuber or one of the comedy websites has the voice of Duke Nukem reading from 50 Shades of Grey.
Just what I need. I'll just take your word for that. I don't think I would have witnessed that.
But you actually want to hear it?
We'll see. All right, 713-526-5738. Looks like we've got an interesting named person in the queue. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who do we have?
Up next, we're going to speak with Tisok.
Tisok, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Okay, I have a question with regards to the quality time that I'm getting from Netflix or the lack of. What happens is when I'm watching a movie on Netflix, it goes into a buffering mode. And my question is there anything that I can do on my computer before I get onto Netflix that can reduce that buffering time?
How are you connecting to your network?
Through the internet cable, sir.
You're using an Ethernet cable plugged into a router to your modem?
Correct.
Is it DSL or cable? Do you have Comcast or AT&T?
Actually, my son installed it. I'm not really sure.
Do you know what? Okay, yeah. I guess you would know what service then, or how, what kind of upstream and downstream or any of that.
It's AT&T.
All right, so you have DSL. So that should give you enough bandwidth to provide you with a reasonable Netflix
I think even
stream.
The cheapest DSL is still...
Yeah, so you just need 1.5 or even like 768. You can do it. Can you? Are you in front of the computer now?
Nope. I'm actually in my car right now.
All right, well, the thing that causes buffering is going to be your data connection between the laptop and the Netflix servers. So that could either be, it could either be, the buffering could either be a symptom of a problem with your internet connection, or it could be a symptom of a problem with, you know, the Ethernet cable or the router. There's a lot of things that could cause a slowdown. Is this the only computer that you have?
Two of them, sir.
Do you ever try Netflix on the other computer?
No.
Try it on the other computer and see if you have the same problem on the other computer.
Uh-huh.
That will tell you whether or not the issue is with your computer or whether it's maybe with your internet connection.
The other thing you want to do, find out if you can, even if it's going through your son, find out what class of service you have and, you know, what your guaranteed bandwidth is, and then go to a speed test site like speakeasy.net/speedtest, or just Google speed test, and then actually go out there and see kind of what your upstream and downstream is. And if you're just not getting any downstream whatsoever, if you're not getting at least like 1.5 megs, you might want to make a call or have your line checked out, depending on, you know, what you're paying for.
Levels of service that you can get there.
It really varies depending on, you know, I mean, they have I don't know what the basic package is from AT&T in terms of the download speeds, but they could be as low as 256K, which might be a little on the slow side for streaming movies. So if you have the very base version of the service, it may not be suitable for downloading or watching streaming video.
It wouldn't be the age of the PC only because if it starts playing the Netflix thing in the Silverlight player and it does fine, mm-hmm. it's cool. It's that it sounds like it's like stopping playing halfway through and going into buffer.
What about amount of RAM?
It could have something to do if the computer is particularly underpowered. If it's got low amounts of RAM, if it's got a spyware infestation, or it's got a lot of applications running in the background, that could certainly cause it to slow down and have problems with the stream.
I've got two computers, and one is definitely runs Netflix better than the other.
Right. So,
and the other one is older, much older computer.
Do you know much about the computer that you're using, Tasak?
I do not, but the computers are recent.
They are
fairly new. Okay.
Sounds like a bandwidth issue.
Yeah, it could be. Definitely.
With the buffering, yeah.
Are either one of the computers laptops, or are they both?
They're both laptops.
They're both laptops?
Desktops.
Oh, desktops.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say try the other computer just to see if it does any, if it performs any better with Netflix as a test. And if it does, then you can start to troubleshoot the PC that you're having the problem with. If you have the same problem on both computers and you're looking at troubleshooting your internet and your network connections.
Got it, sir.
Okay?
Good night.
All right, good night. Thanks for your call. All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. We have plenty of time left in the show. Actually, not plenty. We got about half an hour left in the show, so that's plenty of time, technically.
It's time enough.
Unfortunately, because we were not broadcasting over the airwaves to start the show, we probably, you know, lost a good percentage of our audience. So we're probably down to, like, you know, down 50% or so, down to 2.
So are you getting all spied up for DEF CON, Jay? Jay's got, like, some telephoto, you know, CIA-quality lenses in here for, you know, taking surveillance shots of people 2.5 miles away, it seems like. It looks pretty impressive.
Well, I don't, you know, as far as spy camera shooting and stuff at DEF CON, I don't think I'm going to be shooting too much telephoto. I'll be being in more up-close and personal lenses because I don't want, at DEF CON, you don't want to photograph people on the sly. I think that's...
even as press, you have to get permission
So if you're going to shoot a group of people, you have to everybody sign off on it or agree to it. So I'm not going to be the guy that's sneaking photos of people. But I am going to bring the gear that's going to allow me to photograph interesting people and interesting situations that want to be photographed. Like, I hope to... If that steampunk cyborg chick is there again... What was it? What did we consider her to be? Afflicted?
She was like a raver chick.
A raver chick, like a nuclear raver chick, like some kind of post-apocalyptic, you know, had a weird mask on, like a Hannibal Lecter mask.
It's actually one of the pretty common rave styles. There's a few, like, sub-genres of clothing styles in the rave scene, and kind of like a steampunk post-nuclear Mad Max is one of the styles.
Okay, so yeah, so if she's there, if Barrett wants to get his picture taken with the pedo bear again. We don't have that available to us, so I'll bring. I'm definitely bringing some camera gear. I'm hoping to. I don't know if it'll happen. I might just have to make it happen. I want to get out to the Hoover Dam.
Just make it happen. Figure it out and play it by ear. But yeah, just make it happen.
Flag down a limo and get driven out there. That's the fun thing about last time at the DEF CONs was, well, we want to go to this other casino. Let's get a limo, and you just get like 10 people and load them up in a limo. And then when you count heads, it's 11 people, and one of those is Emmanuel Goldstein. So you have that going on. So
we had a pretty awesome DEF CON last year. So we're coming up on DEF CON 20 years of DEF CON, largest.
It's not our 20th. It's not probably 20 for us. But
yeah, but it's
the 20th anniversary, which should make it very interesting in terms of those who should show up. I think it's going to be a big deal.
The largest information security conference in the U.S., possibly the world.
All right, Groove House, looks like we got a lot of people on hold.
Yes, we do. If they'll hang out, I'll be right back to help them.
All right, who do we have up first?
All right, up first, though, we're going to take Malik.
Malik. Hi, Malik.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Good. I have what could possibly be a quick question. I called y'all with one before, and we never had an answer, but it's okay. So I have a couple desktops at the house, and just to make a long story short, there were some issues with the UVOS router, and they ended up having to replace, I think, 4 routers one time.
And then went out and found that there was an issue on the line, so they fixed that. Finally, I got my internet back, and two of my desktops just quit working. No more Ethernet connection at all.
No more Ethernet connection at all. Two computers. Did you have a recent storm?
Did
you have any lightning or power outage?
The other desktops work.
Well, it's not unreasonable or unexpected for, damage to happen to one computer due to an electrical strike, but others to be okay. If you had a power surge or anything that might have come up through the Ethernet, that could have caused it. What troubleshooting have you done to determine that it's actually the Ethernets that are out on these computers?
I have been completely lazy about this thing. I'm just trying to...
So you were hoping that you could just call into a radio show and we'd say flip this switch and your Ethernet would start working again? I don't know.
No, it's not like that. I mean, it's got the lights on the card.
Uh-huh.
But it's not...
Does the indicator indicate that it sees that you're plugged into Ethernet?
Uh-huh.
It does?
Yeah.
But you're just not able to get to... Are you the one that called in a number of weeks ago that had three computers that might have been using Internet connection sharing that we went on and on about?
Oh, no. I called y'all on my G-phone, on my Android phone, eating up my contacts.
Oh, okay. We had somebody else. So on your computers on this network, they're all sharing a router. So you have a router in place?
They're sharing a router. They're going through the router to the they're going through a hub to the modem, to the router.
When did they stop working?
I'd say
2 weeks ago?
Oh, no. It's been more than that. I have plenty of computers, unfortunately, that I'm not missing them, but my wife is and the kids. So it's been over a month.
Okay.
Did I say that out on the air?
Well,
I know that I've had a problem in the past where there was an electrical strike and my computer kept working, but it did mess up the Ethernet card and the light still came on. But it would not work, and I had to replace the card, and then everything worked.
I'm kind of leaning towards possibly it's the card, but the lights showing up really kind of made me second guess myself.
Well, have you tried uninstalling and reinstalling the drivers for the network interfaces?
It's not taking the updates.
What do you mean 7? It's not taking?
It's not
the Windows updates. I'm talking about updating the actual drivers, like going to the manufacturer's website, finding the drivers for the Ethernet interface on the computer and installing those specifically.
No, I haven't done that.
I would try that. That may mean you have to get the computer that's online to get the files you need and transfer them over to that computer and try reinstalling the drivers. That's like the first stop. The first thing I would do is I would, first of all, just go in the device manager, uninstall the network interfaces, reboot the computer, let it redetect them and reset them up from scratch, and then see if that works. If that doesn't work, then I would look at updating the drivers and see if that clears it up. If that doesn't work, then you're probably looking at a possible hardware issue, at which point you're going to have to consider replacing the
network interface. You could also try, just for fun, going to your hub or wherever all your computers are plugged into, and take the one that's working and unplug that cable and take one of the ones that's not working and plug that cable into the
port
jack of the one that was working and see if it works. Because it's possible also that it could be the port or ports on your hub have gone bad, because sometimes that happens. The hub or switch, like, one or more ports will go bad, but the rest of the switch is still working.
Yeah, I plugged the laptop into the into the same drop, and it worked fine.
Okay, so the cable should be
fine.
And
I did disable the wireless too. I thought maybe actually the cables might have gone dead. They're about 9 years old. So
okay,
but no, yeah, that seems to be okay. So.
Okay. So you think it is possible that it would knock out the card? I'm going to
Well, what we're saying is that
taking out the, you know,
these are certainly the possibilities that these is what could happen, but unfortunately the amount of effort that it would take to diagnose the problem is where we, you know, is what is making it more complex. You have to do certain things. You have to try certain things to isolate the problem. Hopefully it's not a hardware issue. Hopefully it's not that the hardware's gone bad. But there's no easy way to just tell if that's the case. There are some things you have to do to troubleshoot it and figure it out to see if that's what the cause is. And that's why I'm saying if you go in the device manager, uninstall the drivers for the device, let the system kind of reset it up from, you know, by redetecting the hardware and reapplying the drivers. Sometimes that clears it up. Sometimes downloading new drivers and installing those will clear up a problem like this. The fact that you have two computers that have gone out tends to point to some kind of hardware issue, even though the other computers are working.
And like I said, I've actually had it happen to me where the lights still came on, they flickered with data activity, but the actual chips on the card, something burned, and it, so the card could not function, but it looked like everything should be fine.
The link light's pretty high up in the chain. I mean, you just need to have an electrical connection for that to come on. That doesn't mean anything below it's working, so yeah. And back in the old days, I actually fried a PC, a mainboard, through my modem, through something that hit the telephone line, came in through that, and took it out, so, yep.
All right, Groove House.
Yes.
Who we have up next?
All right. Up next, we're going to talk to Stefan.
Stefan, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, man. After years of trying, man, I finally got through to you guys. How y'all doing?
Good. What can we do for you?
Well, I got kind of two questions here. One is an SSD question, and the other one is a how many monitors can I hook up to my PC question. The SSD question is kind of based on the reliability of the thing. A couple of years ago, we had a the day job had a couple of custom rigs built, and we had an SSD put in one, and it just ate our lunch. It just, you know, it after about 2 weeks, it cratered. We're doing video editing software and stuff, and we had it replaced. It cratered again, kind of in the same way, and then we just said no more SSDs. And I'm about to build another rig, and I want to know, can I go SSD safely these days?
Was,
I don't know.
Was the first one an off-brand, or was it a name brand?
It was a custom rig we had built by some guys here in Houston. And I was the guy who spec'd it out, so I couldn't tell you exactly what kind of motherboard and all that kind of...
I mean the brand of SSD drive. Do you know what brand of drive you had?
It's all ancient history at this point, so...
I mean, back in the... You know, if you were doing that 2 years ago, they were extremely expensive. They were still kind of new. You know, it's possible that, you know, some people were fast, rushed them out to market, and they were just getting them out there. I'm using almost exclusively SSDs in the last machine that I built, and I haven't had an issue, and I have pretty bad hardware luck.
Okay, so
and they're already moving
now,
parts,
you know,
so
kind of the deal.
Yeah, so as far as from a mechanical failure standpoint, they're safer than like your old school hard drives, and the price points are finally coming down. And like Pete said, you know, just maybe 15 or 20 minutes ago, now is probably a good time to do a little bit of research and wait because one of the major manufacturers are doing some price drops on SSDs, which should force, you know, the rest of the industry down.
Okay, all right. So that was kind of my question before I just, like, jump back and go spend some bucks on one of these things, whether or not, you know, like it's kind of safe to do that at the moment. My other question was how do I get more than two monitors, actually three monitors, hooked up to a PC so that my video editing software can talk to one of them as it's video
It's
going
to have to. It's going to have to come down to the graphics card that you have. There are like a number of graphics cards out there that'll support four monitors. I know that I think it was NVIDIA. Is it called the Quadra or something like that? But there are cards out there. A lot of them, when you get up into four heads or four monitors, they're usually a little bit higher end, like graphics workstations. So you'll be looking at $300, $400, maybe even $500. But just go Google search, figure out how many you want, and you know do like a four monitor video card and see what you've got. Then you also might be able to do like SLI with two gaming cards and get four monitors possibly.
Okay. Well, possibly. I'm using. I just picked up an NVIDIA card because that's what the editing software wants to talk to, and so if unless your NVIDIA There's SLI. Do I just get another card?
Yeah, do a little bit of research. It comes down to the card. But yeah, you put in the model number of card you have. SLI actually is the opposite of having multiple monitors. SLI takes multiple graphic cards and puts into one source. What you're doing is you're rendering twice as fast into one monitor. You want to go the opposite way. But exactly. I think sometimes just adding another graphics card, just Google, do Google for four monitors at once, NVIDIA, and your graphics card model, and see what comes back.
So I was talking to one of the guys down at, Fry's the other day, and he said that there was a way I could actually talk to the motherboard in a way to open up the port on the motherboard so that I could get a feed out of it in spite of having a graphics card plugged in.
That's possible, too. I mean, that's one of those things where Jamie or someone else may know, but I would just, take the main board you have. It's going to come down to the hardware you've got. So take the main board you have. Take the NVIDIA card you have. Throw the model numbers into Google, put in multiple monitors, and see what comes back. But yeah, I think it sounds plausible that you could enable the standard AGP or the standard video card on the main board.
Some main boards will automatically disable the onboard video when you plug a card in. But others,
that's the problem I keep running into.
And some will and some will not disable it. But beyond that, in my experience, the ones that don't disable it sometimes still don't work right. So when you're trying to do a multiple display system, but like Barrett's talking about, there are cards out there. I've not seen the quad cards, but I've seen the cards that, they have one port and it has a cable with a splitter on it, hooks up two monitors. So for sure you could get, you could probably at least do two of those, but I'd do the research, see if you could find one of the four card or one of the four monitor cards and see about using that in your PC and bypassing the onboard video. If you're trying to actually do a multi-display system for real, like for doing real work, I would get the hardware necessary to do it right and not try to...
It's not really a multi-monitor setup. I use two monitors for the editing software, and the editing software itself accesses the third monitor as a video output, so it talks to it differently, still kind of shows up, in certain ways. Right now we're using a USB monitor rig, and it's kind of a squirrely thing where the resolution isn't all that secure. So
does the software itself just look at the number of monitors you have and say, okay, I'm going to do this with these two monitors, and I'm going to do that with the third monitor? I mean, it's all software specific, right? It's not like when Windows decides you're going to have your monitor, you're going to have split display, you're going to do stretch display, you're going to duplicate your display. Does the software that you're using actually look at your hardware and say, hey, I see three monitors. What do you want to do with monitor number one, number two, and number three?
Well, Windows has taken two of them to show me the software, and then it's leaving the third one on this USB port available for the software itself to access as an output. It's Adobe Premiere that I'm using.
Okay. I'm going to check out the Adobe Premiere online forums and go talk with those people, because
not much help there. It's kind of large.
Do they have supported? Go see if they've got supported graphics cards on there. But the Matrix cards, that's what they've been around for forever. They were the first ones to do dual headed cards. I'm seeing them on eBay for under $100. I was way off on the price. You can go four monitors for $100 these days. So
that sounds pretty good. Okay, well, like I said, I've been calling for years and I just got through, man. I appreciate your time.
All right, well, good luck. Thanks for your call.
All right, man.
All right, bye.
Bye.
All right. So, looks like we probably have enough calls to get us through the rest of the show without giving out the numbers. So we are going to go to the next call, if Groovehouse will help us out.
I'll do my best.
All right.
All right, let's talk to Charles.
Charles, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
Yeah, I've got a question. Actually, hopefully it's a short two-parter. I have a MacBook Air, and under my system preferences on the sharing, I have everything deselected by default. But something's happened twice, once this month at an airport, once last month at a hotel. Whenever I would open a Finder window, it said that someone else's Mac was connected to mine whenever I would use Wi-Fi. And I would try to eject it, but it wouldn't eject. The only way I could make it go away would be to turn off the Wi-Fi.
Are you sure that it was seeing another computer connected to you? Is that what it was saying? Or was it just showing you in your Finder window that you had that you could see someone else's computer?
Well, it's listed. It was listed under the devices. Whenever I would open a Finder window,
right?
then it would be devices, and it would say such as MacBook Air.
Yeah, it usually just it's just listing all Apple devices that are in its local network that have Bonjour or whatever turned on.
I can see it'll list them. I can see Groovehouse's laptop, and I can see yours.
But yeah, just because you can see them.
Oh, really?
Big XPS, baby?
Yeah.
What you're seeing is these other machines are on the same wireless segment, and they're advertising services, but it doesn't mean that they're just spilling information. They would have to have your username and your password. You'd have to enable some services. A lot of things would have to line up for them to truly connect
unless
to your
machine. Unless you have an open share, or unless you've chosen to share something.
Right.
No, the easiest way to do it is... I'll just keep everything, no sharing at all.
Yeah, go into System Preferences, look at your sharing menu, and then as long as nothing's checked, you're fine. Yeah, you're fine.
But you will see other computers on the network because they are broadcasting their existence to someone.
Oh, okay. So it's harmless.
Because what I'm looking at the Finder. If what you are seeing is what I see, is that you open up your Finder, you have your favorites, you see all my files, AirDrop, desktop, blah, blah, blah. And then there's a section that says shared, and then you see the names of other computers.
Well, no, actually, it didn't show up under shared. It showed up under devices.
Where were you? Were you in your home?
The first time I was in a hotel in Prague last month, and then this last time it was last week in an airport in Little Rock.
Do you have Bluetooth enabled?
No.
Because Bluetooth devices will show up like that.
I'm not seeing anything that shows up as devices, but...
Yeah, it's only happened twice, and that's why it had a little triangle like to eject, and I tried to eject it in both times, and...
What is it? What are the devices called, or what do they say?
Well, the first one was, it said such and such somebody's MacBook Air. And then at the airport in Little Rock last week, it said somebody's MacBook Pro.
Now, I've seen other people's MacBooks when I've been in hotels and stuff because they're on the same network segment. But I haven't, I'm trying to remember if I saw it in a different place or not. I don't think you have that it's a real concern. I think it's having to do with those computers.
What version of Mac OS are you running?
The latest. 10, was it 10.7? 10.7.
Yeah, it's Lion.
Yeah.
I was just curious, because I say maybe they changed where those list at some point.
Like I said, it's only happened twice, and I've used Wi-Fi quite a bit in hotels and airports, but those two times, it just kind of threw me for a loop, because that was the first time that I'd seen it. And whenever I would click on those other laptops, well, nothing would show up, but you know, it's just that it was just sort of there, and the only way I could make it go away would be to turn off the Wi-Fi, and then I would turn the Wi-Fi back on, and after about 20 seconds it would come back.
I think that's just because they are on the same network. You obviously turn off the Wi-Fi, they're going to go away. You won't see any other devices on the network because you're not on the network. If you could, if you're in that situation again and you can get a screen grab of what it is and then send that to us. I'm telling you what I see, and I do see other computers, but I don't see them as devices. I mean, the XP computer that Groovehouse is using has a unique icon. It looks like a monitor. The one that Barrett has a Mac, so it kind of looks like a little laptop on mine, but...
Yeah.
And I have seen other times where I've been in a hotel and it says Bob's iMac or Bob's MacBook Pro or something like
These
that.
These could be people that have on... excuse me. They could have on file sharing, and it could be showing up like that. So that's their bad, not your bad. They're advertising some kind of service to get their machine to show up differently to you. So they probably have stuff on that they have turned on at home that they shouldn't have turned on.
They might have their public share turned on or something like that.
That would make it pop as a device.
I haven't been able to browse devices like that when I see them in the hotels. I'll sometimes click on them and see what I see, and I've sometimes seen publicly shared folders.
Yeah, I mean, you can always, I hate to say do that, but you can always like create a text file and say, hey, your stuff is shared. Close it down.
Right.
Oh.
I don't think it's a symptom of a problem. I think it's natural, but I think it's, like Barrett said, it's somebody else.
You're not the one with the problem is what it comes down to.
Good. That was the main thing I was wondering.
All right.
Okay, well, I sure appreciate the help.
And I hate you for having been to Prague recently.
I love it.
But he had to go to Arkansas, too, so I think it washed it off.
Kind of washed it off, yeah. Yeah. I had a nice little apartment right off the main square for a couple of weeks when we were there before. So.
Oh, yeah, that's where I was at, over there, too, just east of the train station.
Yeah. Just on the east side of the square, you know, past the clock and down that little windy road. I love that city.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It's my favorite.
All right, well, don't go again.
Okay.
Don't use it all up. All right, have a good night. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Okay, bye-bye.
All right. 713-526-5738, maybe.
2 minutes.
All right. Groovehouse is about to give us another call. Who do we have up next, Groovehouse?
All right, up next, we're going to take George.
George, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Good, good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right, doing all right. Great show, by the way. First time I caught it, and, man, I'm happy to hear you guys are on the air. That's fantastic.
All right, thanks.
Quick question, I hope. I have a 2006 iMac, and it was not the brand new Intel dual core, but it was the one just after it, which is the way it makes sense to me is that I was the earliest version of the dual core iMac that could upgrade to the OS X Lion software operating system. And I am so slow in running. It didn't happen immediately. It seemed to kind of, I uploaded it and it seemed to install it and seemed to run fine for about 2 weeks. And then, I mean, I plug in an iPhone and I might as well leave the room and come back in 10 minutes. It's like a PC from, you know, 1993. It's really bad. And I'm at the point where is there a troubleshoot I can go through? Do I upgrade the RAM or do I bite the bullet and just need to buy a new machine?
How much RAM do you have right now?
Stock.
So maybe 2 gigs or 1 gig? I know it'll go to 4 gigs, I think.
I think it's one.
If you've just got one, quadrupling the RAM might not be a bad idea. If you've got the late 2006, I'm showing that you've got two different DIMM slots, and each one will take 2 gigs. You could go up to 4 gigs in that.
Okay.
And that's probably about the only upgrade you can really do to it, aside from maybe the hard drive, to be honest.
Right. That's my understanding is the only upgrade I could do.
Right.
But, I mean, it being that old, I bet you could pick up some RAM for pretty cheap, or maybe even, like, look on eBay or something for some refurbished RAM just to find out. It's going to be a little bit trickier than replacing, you know, RAM in a standard machine, but there are a number of breakdown guides. Even if you go to support.apple.com and look up, you know, iMac late 2006, they actually have a upgrade instructions for the memory installation. They'll show you how to do it, you know,
okay.
All the
yeah,
way through.
I'm,
it's actually it's not that tough, believe it or not. I'm looking at it. You just need a Phillips screwdriver and you're good to go.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident about it. I actually had a hard drive failure a little over a year ago, and I had to put in a new hard drive. I did that on my own, too.
No, that may be something else. I'm not too sure if you can do it, but if it will accept an SSD drive, you know, there are SSD drives on sale this weekend for, like, under $100. That would definitely speed it up, too, because that's a much, much faster drive. You give it some more RAM, you know, the bottleneck is going to be the processor, but that's usually the fastest piece of the machine. Usually the bottleneck is going to be the drive and the RAM. So if you take care of those two, you might be able to get a little bit more life out of it.
Okay, that's great information. I appreciate that.
All right.
Is there any way to turn off trying to sync with the machine with my phone when I plug it in or any other device?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay.
Wait,
so
what version of OS 10 are you running on that? Did you say?
Whatever the latest is.
Oh, okay.
10.4? 10.
What is it, sync with the phone?
So, yes, every time you plug it in, it wants to scan the files. It automatically opens iTunes.
Is it an iPhone that you have?
Yes, sir.
There's an option inside of iTunes to tell it what to do when it detects that a device has been connected. I just haven't changed those configurations but there's a way to do that.
Okay, so on the machine in one of the settings.
You can also now, because with the new versions of iPhone OS as of 5.2 or whichever it was, they went to a cloud version. So now you can actually have it, you can set it so that your phone actually doesn't ever sync with your iTunes ever. Like, it does everything through the cloud.
Okay. I'll have to look into that as well. Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it very much.
All right, thanks for your call.
All right, have a good night.
All right, you too. All right, to answer
I'm just curious. I turned on my computer.
I see Dignan now.
Does it show up under Dignan devices?
No.
Yes, I've got a device on mine. Actually, I'm showing up as a device because I'm advertising
it's showing
remote
up
as services, but yeah.
Okay, yeah, it's showing up as a device on his, It's only showing up as shared on mine.
Well, because I turned on file sharing and Bluetooth sharing.
All right, but here's what's interesting. I see Groovehouse's computer, and it has the eject thing next to it, which I've not ejected because...
Eject. Do it.
No, I'm looking at a picture of a meatball off of his shared drive.
Oh, no. What's in the shared drive? Oh, no.
Is he wearing pants?
It's one called My Pictures.
Is that a Nexus 7?
There's two 5D2 pictures. One, they're both meatballs from May 2nd, 2011.
That is the that was the annual meatball throwdown.
But now I'm gonna under My Music, nothing. Under My Pictures, just those two pictures under My Videos. Oh, my God!
It's under Recorded TV.
Nothing under Recorded TV.
Days of Our Lives, General Hospital.
But there are two meatball pictures.
There were
although
two meatballs.
I'm not giving it a long enough time to load up because it takes a minute.
All right.
But now if I hit the eject button, it doesn't eject. I can't make him... He's still connected to my computer showing me his meatballs.
Take a look at those, buddy.
Have a look at these. Don't you feel inferior? I will say, force eject. E520 documents wasn't ejected. Force eject. Oh, it won't eject. But anyway, so yeah.
Shutting down, Jay. Sorry.
Yeah, we had you by the meatballs.
Yeah. Forget about it.
I could just save now because it's opened up in Finder.
So really, Charles has...
I'm going to Instagram the hell out of this thing.
Hey, now, those pictures aren't yours. I think you know what that means.
I stole the actual photograph.
He is a computer master.
That's right. You hacked my iPad.
I am a computer expert and hacker who knows everything imaginable about computers. All right. So, good Lord, we're running out of time.
You're even going to a convention about it.
Forget about it. We're going to have some fun. So next week, I'll be here. Pete, are you coming to Houston? Did we lose Pete?
No, sorry. Oh. I had it muted because I've been coughing. I will be coming to Houston.
Coming to Houston. Pete's coming to Houston. Awesome. Dwight will probably be here. I'll be here. But Barrett and Flicted will be gone. Groovehouse will be here.
We are leaving Houston.
They're going to head out and do the early reconnaissance.
Jay's making us stand in line 12 hours early for DEFCON tickets. That's not entirely true. We're going to get up early. We didn't disappoint last year.
We will
do it again this year.
And you'll also do some preliminary scouting for party invites to the good parties.
Yes.
I know Flicked's already gotten RSVPs in for something.
Well, I submitted. I haven't gotten anything back.
They're usually so happy when you submit. Like, for those corporate parties, they'll probably just let you in.
I have gotten some spam, though. Some corporate spam
from signing up.
Yes.
Oh, that's what. So we're back on air. So we're back on the archive. So if we were to show the archive, we could say, "Hey, thanks, Linus Torvalds and Bill Gates for being on the air with us. Awesome. Have you next time."
All right. Well, we're gonna get out of here. You've been listening to Technology Bites here on KPFT in Houston or somewhere else. Apparently, we might have picked up a few extra stations. I need to go back and read through my email, but we might have gotten picked up by a couple extra stations.
Wow. All right. Welcome to the new station.
So when are we going to get our 800 number that people can call in?
I don't know.
Oh, but they're not simulcast.
They're not simulcast. Yeah. They're broadcast at different times.
Yes, so. That doesn't matter then.
You're stuck with whatever questions we had.
Yeah, but we did the best we could with the show that we had.
I mean, half a show.
Well, you're lucky to have had half a show.
General goes to war with the army he has.
But at least you got a full meatball.
I like the bokeh meatball in the background. All right. So anyway, you've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's...
One Spicy Meatball, Groovehouse.
Ten years after leaving Apple, the late Steve Jobs agreed to an hour-long interview for Triumph of the Nerds, a TV series about the birth of the personal computer. Only a part of the 1995 conversation was used in the series, and the remainder was thought lost until now. Steve Jobs, The Lost Interview, reveals Jobs at his most charismatic, discussing his pioneering days with Steve Wozniak, talking frankly and sadly about his own forced departure from Apple, and offering his vision of a digital future. A world of wonderful products created by artists and poets. Steve Jobs, The Lost Interview, screens at the Museum of Fine Arts Houston, Brown Auditorium, Thursday, July 12th, Saturday, July 14th, and Saturday, July 21st. For tickets and information, go to www.mfah.org/films. Or call 713-639-7515.
Have you listened to KPFT in HD yet? KPFT has two additional programming channels available to owners of HD radios, and we stream both online. It's like getting several at once for free while actually being tuned in with an HD radio to 90.1. Hear what you're listening to now on HD1. KTRU Rice Radio now airs on KPFT HD2. Our HD3 programming stream includes some of our most popular programs, including Democracy Now!, Uprising, Explorations, BBC News, Free Speech Radio News, and Alternative Radio. In addition, you can hear shows like Counterspin, Flashpoints, and other great programs. Visit kpft.org for a guide on HD radio and our full schedule of HD programming. You can also click the streaming link to hear our HD programming via